Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast. Ring that bell,
woo,
Ronnie.
Woo.
Even though you don't have the bell, I have the bell. I'm Martin. Ronnie's here. Travis is here. Full Voltron. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Wow, Travis, I'm disappointed in you.
Let's go.
Too late. You're too late.
I was sipping on my hard seltzer. I'm sorry.
Oh, if you said that you were sipping on gin and juice, then it might have been forgiven.
No, I don't want to pay Snoop Dogg royalties. We're going to keep it royalty free tonight.
Maybe. Never know. Hey, this is the Aftershock podcast that everyone loves because we're the only one, so you have no choice. How about that? That is quite the slogan we have on the show.
Yeah, it's a Monopoly podcast.
Monopoly podcast. We purchase all other Aftershock podcasts and absorb them into ourselves and fire them.
And then
just
change
like
them
in
to
America.
Different podcasts.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Welcome, gentlemen. Do we have any news, Ronnie? You're the news guy.
We do not have any news this week.
That's
I looked.
Disappointed.
Yeah. It's kind of slow after San Diego, right?
Oh, trust me. I know. Yeah. I do a news episode on my other show, and it was tough finding news that I wanted to talk about.
Worthy news?
Yeah, worthy news. Worthy news. But, alright, that's cool. That means we can get right into the books.
Let's
which
do
really,
it.
That's all we care about, yeah?
Yeah.
Travis, I'm going to let you pick.
News is good, but, you know, like, yeah, that's the meat and potatoes of the podcast. Reviews.
It is the bacon-wrapped jalapenos of this podcast. Travis, which book would you like to talk about first? Is it Animosity number 15 or Dark Arc number 9?
I could do Dark Arc first.
All right. Dark Arc number 9, written by Cullen Bunn with art by Juan Doe, letters by Ryan Hill. Let's get on to the meat and potatoes.
I thought it was a bacon-wrapped jalapeno.
You can't take my lines, bro. How are you going
to
be...
Listen,
you were already demoted... Back down to intern. Now you're stealing my lines. Do you? Let's be serious here. Do you want to stay on this podcast?
This is where I'm comfortable.
Oh, okay, good. All right, I'll forgive you then. Continue. This is a bacon wrap jalapeno. How so?
How so? It's tasty and spicy.
Oh, I like it. It's a good analogy. Whoever came up with that is a genius.
Yes.
Great. Thank you for saying that, Travis. Yeah, it is pretty tasty and it's pretty spicy. We get a lot of flashbacks to Before the Flood in this issue.
Oh, we've been doing the flashbacks for the last few issues,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
Like this latest arc kind of, I guess, is a glimpse into what was leading up to it, you know?
Well, but this kind of explains finally how the human food people got stuck in the arc, right? Because we were talking about that last issue a little bit.
Yeah, and I think we talked about how... Like, they kind of paid off in this issue that, like, the people that they don't let on the arc are kind of, like, it's somewhat of a mercy, you know? Like, because although perhaps they're going to drown, at least they're not, like, in captivity knowing that they'll be eaten by monsters,
mm-hmm.
You know? So they're spared the horror. They're not necessarily spared the pain.
Absolutely. Ronnie, you're awfully quiet over there.
No, I'm letting you guys dive into it because... As you guys think it's tasty and spicy, it's also a little greasy, too.
Oh, it's that bacon. Tell me about that bacon grease. Episode title.
I love how we get the backstory from Mother and the defiant part of it and the monsters from the deep.
Yeah, you know what I liked about that is the comparison, the juxtaposition, as we like to say, for those of you that that have multisyllabic vocabularies, the juxtaposition between the human mother and her child and the echidna in the monsters.
Right.
I thought that was really well done.
It was.
Hey, what's your take on echidna and her children, you know? Because I don't know, like I think there's enough to suggest that maybe she's not particularly maternal either, you know? Like... They're in a situation where they're all talking about how are we going to survive? We're all starving to death. And she's like, well, I'm going to go to the Ark and have some because I'm mother. And then, you know, we'll talk about when you guys get to eat later, you know? And, you know, I don't know. I don't know how much I buy into her kind of maternal instincts. I feel like maybe she's using them to try to get back on top, you know, regain her superiority.
Yeah, because she's been away for a while, right?
Yeah,
don't call
yeah.
it a comeback.
Don't
yeah.
call it a comeback. Man, we're full of snappy phrases tonight.
Yeah, we are.
I'm very curious, though, like, where has she been the whole time?
Underwater?
Sure, underwater, but, like, but why?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because Shrey, nobody knows that she's still around, right? So after she and Shrey have their little discussion and she throws him down into the ocean, mm-hmm. he gets awakened by the devil. We assume the devil. And the devil, or whatever is talking to him, is like, hey, like, you need to get up. She's something of old. Like, you know, we're basically like, we're rebuilding the world. And, like, you're responsible for that rebuild.
Right. Now, with that being said, though, do you think that Shrey played her, though?
Not on purpose.
You don't think he had a plan the whole time?
Huh.
Because, I mean, if he didn't have a plan, then this would have been a suicide mission, right?
Yes.
So, with him being a great wizard or sorcerer or whatever, you would think that he would have some kind of plan going in and not just, okay, well, she's going to take my side or I'm going to die type thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose it's possible. I don't know. I mean, he does seem to be able to plan very much ahead. So I could see that being a possibility, but I don't know if from the stuff that we saw in this particular issue, I really got the feeling that he planned this particular series of events.
That he did or did not?
Did not.
Okay.
I kind of also take it at face value, like maybe even just from the perspective that he has to be kind of woken up towards the end and told what to do to save himself. And now he's, you know, ostensibly taking orders from somebody else,
mm-hmm.
you know, which suggests also, I mean, you kind of mentioned that you think it's the devil towards the end that's talking to him. I thought the monsters like that they show on the last page look more like what we've seen of the vampires. Did you guys get that?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah,
now, I wanted to ask you guys about that because he mentioned something about like all these dead bodies. So at first I was like, well, these are probably just like zombie humans, right? Like people that died because of the flood.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you're right; they do look a little bit like the zombie thing, the vampire things. So I'm not sure what to think about that.
Yeah. Also, I was looking at an old issue, trying to like refresh, and I just happened to notice that he gets bitten by a vampire in issue like 4 or 5.
Hmm.
And here at the end of the issue, they make reference to like your family, and I was just wondering if maybe what if it was the vampires that are under the water? There, you know, like there's always been more vampires chilling out there or whatever, and he got bit, and you know they're trying to make their own play.
Hmm. That's an interesting point because Mother does say that she doesn't want to feed on him because he's tainted.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you think save your family means it's more broad than actual his family that's on the ark?
What occurred to me was maybe the family is like his vampire family. Like he's got a new family. It's, you know, the vampire clan. And like, what if they weren't actually talking about his biological family? They specifically make reference to, you know, save your family and let the ones who are meant to drown, drown. So who was meant to drown? The monsters or the humans or both?
Right.
If the humans die, the vampires can't feast on anything.
Right.
But if the humans die also, then this whole mission or quest, whatever you want to call it, goes awry anyways, because the overall thing is the Dark Ark has to reach the new land so they can survive in the new world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I don't know. Also, you guys say that these guys look like the vampires and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it looks like the creature from the Black Lagoon thing at the very beginning of the book.
Huh.
Like the one that jumps aboard first. I'm trying to find it. But yeah, because it's the one that talks to Krull, right?
Right.
That's what it kind of looks like to me.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe. It's very possible.
Because they're amphibian looking anyways, right? Like Abe Sapien from,
yeah, from
Hellboy.
Hellboy.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I think the deeper we get in, when you get some questions answered, you get 30 more questions that pop up with this particular book.
Yeah.
You know, and I dig that. I think I may have mentioned this at one point before, but I find this whole thing with who told him about the flood, who told him to build the ark, I find that whole thing really interesting. Because you're right, you know, I said the devil, but we don't know that. And then when we had the angels pop up before, they were kind of a little douchey, as you say.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, this reminds me a little bit of like, I don't know how much you guys know about, like Gnostic theology. Mm-hmm. But for the Gnostics, things worked a little bit differently. And the God of the Bible was an evil God, an evil, selfish God. And then you had an actual creator God that was a separate entity. And this whole thing almost reminds me of that.
Yeah. Agreed.
Mm. All right. What else do we want to discuss about this book?
Wando's knocking it the hell out of the park with this one for me.
Yeah,
final thoughts.
What else is new? What else is new?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's just another day at the office for him, you know.
Yeah,
it plays to his strengths, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought also like another thing that was interesting in this, and I don't have necessarily a lot to say about it, but kind of when the monsters are kind of alone on the ark.
Uh-huh.
And they're talking about, like, yo, you know, when we get to the new world, we're going to have to learn a new way of life, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, like, they're talking about the idea of, like, they're basically, like, farming and harvesting human flesh.
Right.
And, you know, they're arguing about, you know, well, I don't want to do that, but it's what you got to do to survive. I thought that was an interesting idea, you know, that, like... Like, even the monster's got to change, you know?
Yeah. Yep, very cool. All right, let's rate it up. Travis, you're going first.
I'll go 4 out of 5.
All right. Ronnie?
I'm going 4.5 out of 5 because this book is always so good and, you know, deep. Even though, like, everything's on the surface and you can just read it, but, like, there's layers and layers and layers that you can go into.
Yeah, I'm also going to go 4 out of 5 because I'm trying not to do, I'm not trying not to do decimal places on my ratings, man.
Oh, you're going back to the Netflix system?
Netflix doesn't even have ratings anymore.
I'm talking about, like, you know,
old school
podcast.
The old school,
yeah, like,
Netflix ratings.
Like if it was one, it was hated it.
yep, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, 4 out of 5 for me. I'm digging this book quite a bit.
Cool.
All right, let's go on to Animosity number 15. This is written by Marguerite Bennett with art by Raphael De La Torre. Colors by Shwaggy P and D. Cuniff. Letters by Marshall Dillon.
And this is also Shwaggy P's last one? Isn't that what I saw on Twitter?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, correct.
Just for this series?
Yes.
Hmm.
Shaggy P's moving on up in the world.
He's a baller, dude.
He is a baller.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, with a name like Shaggy P. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hmm. Why hasn't Shaggy P been on the show yet?
I don't know.
All right, we need to fix that. Shaggy P, you coming on the show. All right. Animosity 15. So this takes place immediately after the last issue, and I think we were left wondering whether Kyle was dead or not. Now, before we continue with the discussion of this issue, I still don't know if Kyle is dead or not.
Yeah, it's still open-ended. Yeah, this read like a obituary type thing for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? You would, like, for a main run of Batman, say, or Spider-Man, or something that's really long and ongoing, this could be considered like a one and done or like a filler issue.
Mm-hmm.
But this one really wasn't. I mean, it didn't feel like that.
No, it didn't. You're right. It didn't at all. I mean, there was no discussion about anything else in the world right now aside from Kyle. right? And we got his entire life story from being a refugee found on a ship until now, and all the different names that he's had, all the different foster homes that he's been in, all the different situations that he's gone through, from being a kid all the way till currently being grown up and laying presumably dead in the forest. Because again, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
Right. And the thing is, the main thing that makes me think that he's still alive is that he's the one narrating the story. So maybe it's like his final moments, you know, like how your whole life flashes before your eyes.
Yeah.
Maybe it's that thing, and that's the story that we're getting. And then that last panel is when he actually does die. Maybe that's the way the issue is supposed to be read.
He's narrating the life flashing before the eyes thing.
Correct.
That's an interesting idea.
You don't think so?
I just think that, you know, that's not something. I guess like other movies have basically been like a dead character narrates his life and death, you know, but tying that into the like the idea of the light flashing before your eyes, like I feel like that's original. It's kind of like, you know, I don't know. I was going to make a movie reference, but it would have been pretty spoilery, so I'm just going to sidestep it. But I will also say that I agree it's definitely a little ambiguous, you know, right now, whether he's dead. And part of that is just because I guess I find it, like, I'm not sure why specifically you would choose to withhold all of this character information until after the character is already dead, you know? I do see the point about, like, well, this is the send-off, this is the obituary thing, but all of this might have informed his character while he was still alive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe it's just wishful thinking that, you know, the character will stick around and that, you know, some of it will pay off a little bit more. I don't know, for instance, whether this is meant to explain on some level the kind of strange decisions he's made with Jesse, you know, like from ratting her out in the old place to kidnapping her and bringing her to this place that seems horrible. If that's just like he's trying to save her from his own experience.
Yeah, see, I think this is like his redemption story. Because for the last like 4 or 5 issues, since he ratted her out, he's turned from a good guy to what the hell are you doing type thing. And so now, in his final moments, as we say, then this is like his redemption story or something of that effect, whether, you know, he's fully redeemable or not, you know, that's for us to decide.
Mm-hmm.
But my question to you guys is, does he hate animals or does he love animals?
I don't know if he has a particular viewpoint on that. I saw that whole bit when he started talking about the animals in his story, kind of as a way of showing us that even though we're in this world, everyone's fighting each other, right? Animals against animals, humans against humans, humans against animals. Like, it shouldn't really matter because ultimately we're all the same.
Okay.
That's the way that I took it.
Travis?
That's a good question, you know? Like, I would agree that in a way it's maybe speaking to them being the same. You know, because he's like, oh, you know, I used to be an outsider with all these different ethnic groups around New York or whatever. And, you know, now I'm the outsider amongst animals. You know, worth noting that the humans didn't make him wear chains when he was hanging around, you know. So in that sense, maybe justifiably, he might prefer the humans.
Yeah. See, the only reason I say that is because some of the things that he says when he's narrating, right? Like, people made him uncomfortable and they couldn't find them homes, but people always loved the animals and they found the animals home type thing. And then, like, when he has to feed the dog, you know, he's not really happy about feeding the dog because he's starving. And then so, you know, he eats part of the dog food with the dog. So it's like he's bouncing back and forth, like struggling with if he hates them or not, in my opinion.
Well, dude, I think that he is obviously envious of the animals, given his experience, you know? Like that, at least the, he's envious of the ones that are kept, you know? Like, people don't necessarily adopt livestock and they have like the storybook, whatever, they're not necessarily all loved in the same way that, you know, he's jealous of the dogs for getting adopted. But I did think that it was very interesting. The whole thing to me, like, kind of reads like a giant indictment of, you know, like our kind of adoption and foster care, like,
yeah,
situation in this country. Mm-hmm. And basically the message is like, these kids are treated like animals, you know?
Right, right.
He talks about being collared and chipped and his name has changed and like all kinds of pretty gross stuff.
So with that explanation, then it goes back to pointing to what Martin was saying, then it's basically they're both the same.
Yep.
Everybody's equal.
And I think he might identify with the animals given his experience, you know, like he was dehumanized. So that maybe puts him on par with what the animals used to be.
Makes sense, yeah.
And not to bring politics into this, Ronnie, which I know you hate.
Oh, Lord. Here we go.
However, you got to think about the topic of this issue and how it fits into the current thing with the kids that are being locked up away from their parents.
Yeah. Yes, agreed.
Right? So very similar situation.
Also, did you guys notice, since we're off on that tangent, going back on this one, the only person that really made that adopted him, that made an impact on him until she died, her name was Teresa.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
So you have Mother Teresa.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that's not really a political thing, but you know, it's kind of cool, like a shout out type thing that she was the bright light in this whole dark story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that piece of the book was actually pretty nice to see. You know, with the crappy life that he led, to be able to, even if it was just for a couple of years, to find somebody that loved him and cared for him was really interesting. And I think to go with the point that you made earlier, Ronnie, maybe that's the connection to why he did what he did with Jesse, right?
Yeah. And it's also really like real because she died of breast cancer too.
Right.
So, I mean, like you said, like we've always said about this book, is it's anamorphic, but it has real world issues and problems in it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Without addressing them head on, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. I agree. And dude, Martin, that's such a brilliant insight. Like, I didn't even make that connection to, you know, the kiddie concentration camps, but
well,
that,
you know,
definitely
I'm,
is like a,
listen, I'm here for the,
I mean,
brilliant,
okay,
insights.
But this was written 3 months ago, right? this book's been written for months, so
yeah.
So
we can assume
it just might be coincidentally timely in that sense, you know.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah, it's just like the whole Nick Spencer and Captain America Secret Empire thing, right? That was in the can for like 8 months, and then it just unconsequently came out at that time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Stalinverse too. You remember Stalinverse?
Yeah, Stalinverse too.
Never heard of her.
Okay, one more thought before we wrap up.
Uh-huh.
Is remember the stuff that was about the Dunbar's number or the monkey sphere?
Yes.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Do you think it's safe to say that the same logic applies to the animals? Like,
I mean,
the size of their brain kind of dictates how many with the size of their tribe in that way.
I don't see why it wouldn't. I mean, you got to think. Think about animals, right? The majority of animals are not like group animals, right? So you might have like herds of cattle, right? But the only reason you have herds is for protection, not because they have some kind of relationship where they need to memorize faces or how this cow, you know, is related to that cow, whatever else, right? It's only when you get up to quote unquote higher animals that you have that situation, right? So you might see it in like dolphins and whales and obviously primates
and shaved bears.
And let's not talk about shaved bears on this podcast. It's a family friendly podcast. If you want to hear about shaved bears, go listen to Nerd Legion podcast with Nick Wetmore and myself. Thank you. All right. Not shaved bears. I mean, bears are solitary, right? The only time bears live in groups is when a mama bear is raising the cubs, and then once they're grown, they leave and they're back to being solitary. right? And I think that's the majority of the animal kingdom is that way. Aside from schooling or herding animals like fish and cows and maybe sheep. Birds. Yeah, sheep. Yeah, there you go. But animals that don't rank very highly on the IQ level would be more prone to be herding animals because they need protection in numbers. Whereas when you get to a certain point, it's not so much about protection in numbers because you can diversify your skills. And that's why primates are particularly successful. And that's why humans are very successful, right? So they go into the thing about Dunbar's number with like smaller primates like monkeys and then going up to like chimps and humans, right? And I mean, humans can make relationships between thousands of people, really. It maybe kind of starts falling apart after a certain point. I think they mentioned like 150 individuals in here, which I guess kind of makes sense, right? And I don't want to get into this discussion because this is probably a topic for a different type of podcast. But that may ultimately be part of the reason why we as humans get into so much crap when we try to deal with each other, especially now where the entire world is connected to each other, because we're still only capable of processing, you know, 150 relationships, and we're having to process thousands upon thousands of relationships, and we just can't handle that, and that leads to other issues, maybe mental health problems or psychological issues, whatever else. And that's something that's not addressed here, but I think it's probably a valid thing to look at when we look at this book going forward.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
I'm the insight guy. Thank you.
Yep. That's pretty deep and awesome.
All right, what else do we have on this one?
Yeah.
I have one final thing before we wrap it up. I thought of you, Martin, when I read this.
Oh, that's so sweet of you.
Because I thought maybe you were one of the kebab guys since you're a tea hipster and he brought them cinnamon tea.
Yes. Yes.
So I was like, damn it, Martin's in another Aftershock book.
You know, hipsters gotta show up everywhere, bro.
Hipsters got a hip? Is that a
hipsters,
thing?
Hipsters got a hip. Man, that's a good episode title, too.
All right. I mean, Kyle does support the man bun when the wake happens. So,
oh,
I mean,
dude, Kyle is 120% hipster, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah.
He's got the Aaron Bell man bun.
Yep, he sure does.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's rate it up. Ronnie, you can go first on this one.
All right, I'm going straight 4 out of 5 on this one. This one's consistently deep and awesome all at the same time.
I will continue my streak with this book for 15 consecutive months. I will give this a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm going to go 5 out of 5 as well. You know, this issue in particular, like, ripped my heart out, dude. You know, like, it's very emotional and... you know, whether it's a send off for the character or whether, you know, we're going to get the character back, you know, I don't know how much more tragic and, you know, gut wrenching of a story can you tell about a character? So, it definitely hit me hard.
Yep. Marguerite smacked you right in the feels.
Yeah.
Nice. Very nice. All right. That's going to be the end of the episode. Next week, we have a smorgasbord of books.
I see what you did there.
We have Animosity Evolution number 7, Clan Killers number 2, Her Infernal Descent number 4, Hot Lunch Special number 1, and Relay number 2. Yikes.
Yeah. Heavy week.
Prepare for a 3-hour episode.
I will get some hot coffee before we get ready to record next week.
If you want to get in touch with us, of course, the best place is Twitter, at Rumbar316, at The Great Magnet, at Geekvine, and at Aftershock Pod. Head on over to nerdlegion.com and check out all the other shows, including Cullen Bunn's new show with Dennis Hopeless. Misery Swagger. That's it. We're done. See you next time.
Shock the world. We're out.